are preventing the death of many, many people. But you better be pretty sure. And not thinking is not the way never to have to make that decision, because most killing comes from feeling, not from thinking. So that without the truth, without caring about the fact that, like, women wouldn't come out on abortion, I didn't know what was going on. But because they wouldn't even deal with the truth, and the truth had no value in a woman's womb, that's our problem. That's one of our problems. Women die because of our irresponsibility. And we're going to lose, and women are going to be worse off than they were before, just like women, and you could substantiate that by figures, were worse off after the last women's movement, because then they found out that they were free now. The fact that they were in the same position meant that they were, in fact, inferior. And that's why it can't be indulged, and that's why that distinction is so important, and even more important than I had realized before. This now. In the woman's womb, it's like, say if you have a map, and somebody says, I feel that behind that mountain is plain, it's got this kind of, well, it used to go, they never say this, you know, the measurements and everything. That's, I just feel something, that general character is over there. And some dumb bunnies think, it's say, yeah, I guess that's so. They trot up, right? And it's a precipice. And they got a big run going, right? Psh. And it's really, if you have a time problem, if you make too many mistakes, people really give up hope, too. That is, that if movement keeps going, keeps getting bigger, nothing really seems to be happening, and you make sure you don't keep track of what's happening in the legislatures, like this growing women deaf, dumb, and blind in a backlash on the divorce laws. And while I want to get rid of marriage, my plan isn't to eliminate the women to do it. Nobody's watching that. We're losing ground. And that's what comes by sitting and feeling. Those women are going to feel us in a squeeze. So that means, again, we'll lose or have to reduce any demands to a vote. So when you talk about, what do you think of, say, all right, a good example, an abortion again. And it was tricky because it was underground. It was hard to find the facts for sure. But one of the things was 80% of women getting abortions, illegal abortions, are married. Now, these were the figures that I was given by so-called experts, and of course there are very few experts on something that's underground because it can't be checked and so on. It did look kind of funny to me. I guess because I thought, well, married women, it would be more easy to get birth control pills and all because the doctors and so on, and just the women I'd known who wanted abortions tend to be single, but since, well, I was married for 5 years, but, and I thought, well, yeah, but maybe I know more single people, so on. Well, when I did start seeing where these figures came from, that was another wild one. You had estimates anyplace from 500 to 50,000 women dying a year of abortions. Now, you chose your figure on the basis of whether you were for or against abortion repeal. That was literally the criteria. And the married woman argument, of course, first of all, I found out that it was false before I said, then why in the world did people say the other? But when you checked out the figures that began being provable, that is, of like the Clergyman's Consultation Service, where they were helping, and there was, you checked out where they got their references to see if it was reasonable to think that it was a cross-section. All of these things you have to check. It was more like the other way, 80% single. And when I had even said, well, how do you know it's 80% married? People had said, it makes it more respectable. It's not just the moral people. They didn't put it quite that way, but for those clods out there, important, you know, they're not talking about themselves. And I said, but, you know, I'm all for winning, but if it ever comes out that that's not true, it's going to hit us much harder. And isn't it better to deal with the truth and defend that? Because this could boomerang people. If it became exposed, then people could say, wow, it's really bad. In addition to everything else, even they know it because they lie. Now, of course, much later, it did come out that had been false. Now, there were certain consequences that these people even came to believe and base their actions on the fact that these women were married. And if these women were married, they necessarily had a man attached to them by law who would be forced to help cough up the money, help them get it. Leaving aside all the Catholic men who would not permit their wives to get an abortion, much less provide any assistance. So that left aside the emergency nature of these women dying because they had no access to anything. So that's how important this distinction is between feeling and thinking. If you're just feeling, I think you have to ask yourself, in a moral sense, what impression you're giving to people by saying you're a feminist or in the women's movement, because you can feel and not be in the women's movement. If you're in the women's movement, you're saying something, I believe that women are discriminated against. Now maybe this is an assumption on my part that's false. I go from there to think, not only do you think women are discriminated against, but you want to do something to change that. Now that may be a logical fallacy. I mean, can you? No, seriously. This is just because if you're in the women's movement or the black movement or anything, it's fair to assume that you think that there's a problem. But does it commit you to do anything about it? And if so, why? No, not really. I guess logically. It's all solved. Well, movement, yeah, that's it. If it's moving, right? It's got to be going backwards or forwards. It's a movement about women. Movement goes, it doesn't say whether it goes backward or forward.
And circularly.
Isn't it possible for someone to ride a moving object without doing anything actively?
Sorry, can you speak up?
I said, isn't it possible for someone to be on a moving vehicle without doing anything actively? To be a passenger.
But is that again, now the fallacies in analogies are very interesting. Does that hold up as an analogy? If you talk the women's movement, you're talking about a movement concerning women. You're talking about a movement. Now that means that's where semantic analysis is important, and you get into that in almost any analytic philosophy. So you break down the main part, and it's a movement concerning women, which seems to imply that every part is moving, not that there is a hierarchy in terms of degrees of moving. It's a movement about women, so that there is supposedly no main body. In other words, there isn't a vehicle and a rider. There actually is a vehicle and a rider, but I mean in terms of the term, a women's movement. That by the term it should be a movement of people concerned about women. And unless you qualify that, means everybody. That's one of the big fallacies in the women's movement. People say you must work only on black women or poor women are the most important. Now if you say women are oppressed, you're not just saying just poor women or just anything. So until you're prepared to qualify that, you cannot then make that leap.
And what about the women in the movement that are holding it back and creating infighting, and then the agents in the movement?
Well, I guess, obviously, the logic of the term the women's movement has no bearing on our present situation. First place, there isn't any movement any place. There are some individuals who are doing something or trying to. So that actually it is analogous to what she's been saying. That's your vehicle. That's sort of like Model T, right?
But the difference here, it seems to me, to carry out your analogy, if you're talking about a movement, the woman's movement, and then your analogy of a vehicle. What slows a vehicle down is if any of the moving parts in the motor that drive the vehicle forward are not functioning. This will slow down the entire vehicle, just as women who are not functioning in the women's movement are part of the vehicle itself, and if they are not functioning, it's going to slow down the vehicle of the women's movement.
Well, I was only challenging the fact.
The form. Mm.
Yeah, that there are people who are in the women's movement who are not functioning mm-hmm. as a part of the women's movement.
Well, that's why you have to distinguish between, like when I'm talking about the oppression of women, or sometimes I say, I'm not the women's movement, I'm an art critic. Because, if you say, there's no women's movement as far as I can see. There are a lot of people talking about women and claiming that there's a women's movement, but you can't justify the claim. So what we have is a separate issue. I mean, I guess, now that you bring it up, that I'm assuming that we're all here because we know what we have, and the biggest problem now, even more, well, let's say we're trying to step over the problem, which is that there is not a movement, and trying to, my own motivation is that maybe by getting at these distinctions and skills, and anybody here, is wanting, recognizes there isn't one and wants to get one going, that what we really have is what you describe, which obviously is in contrast to what a woman's movement would be. But that's why definition is so important. Definition is so important, because now people say how sloppy it is. Like people say, what's the difference between feminism and women's liberation? Well, when they ask me that, I say, well, there is a distinction, but the ways in which they are used, they're interchangeable. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
There is a distinction between feeling and thinking. But most women do not understand that distinction. So that the reality of a certain context, somebody saying, a woman interested in the movement, what is the distinction in the movement between, and I know she means by movement, the car that's going in every direction, between feminism and women's liberation, you have to separate what objectively is the distinction and what that distinction is in the context she's referring to. This is why it's so important for people to learn. Yeah.
Do you think men know the distinction between thinking and feeling?
Much more so, because they understand it's the best way to keep the power. they know the difference between thinking and feeling. That's why they're engineers and this and that and the other thing, because you have to be able. See, when you think, the worst thing about logic is it gets you in all kinds of trouble, because there's no way of escaping where you're going then, what's in your interest. Now, the reason men think is that they want to be very clear that they maintain their power, and that means that they have to think straight. Or, let's say, thinking in that sense is, they don't want to arrive some morning at their company or what have you and find out that they haven't been watching things too closely and all the money's been run off by the partner to Mexico. So thinking has to do not with your feeling towards somebody, but with really keeping an eye on things, getting facts, watching things, which involves evidence, which involves deduction in terms of past experience from which you deduct what may happen. Not only you can expect to happen now, but in the future. Say, for instance, why I'm here now. I'm here from the point of view of thinking that I know from adding up these things what's going on in the women's movement, even though it's not a popular thing. It's getting more popular simply because people must have just worn themselves out on the other methods. I know that we're not going anyplace, and the reason I know it is that I can cite you the figures that we had at the beginning and show that there is no change, and actually show where we've lost ground. So we've got to do something about this, and I have to figure out, well, how can I account best for the problem of our not getting any place? And it seems that people can't think or maybe have some of these skills, and I know that in my own learning more about that I became much better and could think even against the wave of my own feelings. So I often arrived at conclusions that meant I had to give up doing certain things that I had been doing, and it might even be painful. But once I saw, you know, the situation of, say, for instance, okay, abortion, I saw it was right, and I saw that nobody else was going to speak up and somebody had to, then you would go and do it. That comes from thinking, not from feeling. It comes from thinking against feeling, and it's based or forced even from fact. Now, men definitely think because they want to keep the power they have, and that means you've got to keep your eyes open. Thinking has to do with keeping your eyes open.
Don't women in the same position think also? I think, I know a lot of women that would be upset if they went into the office and all the money was gone too. I think that it's unfair to say that men think and women don't. That's a blanket statement. I think
that the women most should, women.
Well, the women who are in that position,
I would say that men generally, and I'm including women supposedly in high positions, look at Ayn Rand, that men generally make a clearer distinction more consistently between thought and feeling than do women. And that, okay, you say, how do you support that, right? Well, it's easy, I think, to distinguish between thought and feeling in terms of something that you can substantiate. Thinking has to do with a consequence of ideas that are related to each other in some way. Okay, I was thinking of another example. Let's take the idea of a scientific theory. Start with a hypothesis, and then you start testing. See if it goes anyplace. Now, how many women engage in making up scientific theories? Well, you can say, in a sense, say a woman bakes a cake and she reads the directions out of a cookbook, and the cookbook said a teaspoon of baking powder, and the cake just was a disaster. Now, her hypothesis was following this recipe was going to get X results. But something was wrong someplace. So she would have to start testing the variables involved. That would be an example. The stakes aren't too high, unless she's putting a little something extra in the cake. But this is the kind of, so maybe the distinction is more in the stakes. Mm-hmm. But women certainly do not use the scientific method in the important decisions of their life, where men do, like getting married.
Are you saying all women, or are you saying in general?
Well, in 1900 to 1945, where we have the statistics, 2/3 of women married at some time in their lives. 1/2 were married at any given time. Now, 4/5 of women are married at some time in their lives. 3/5 or 2/3 are married at one given time. Now, if you read the domestic relations laws, and almost no woman does, it's the only contract of its kind where the terms aren't listed on it. People make sure they don't look at the domestic relations laws. They sign a contract. This is a common idea, right? You sign a contract, you're agreeing to certain terms. But in this crucial, I mean, everybody admits in that college audience, we're all going to get married. We all want to get married, but they don't know what it is. Or rather, they do know what it is, that's why they don't want the details. But that's not being very scientific. And that's going to shape their whole life. Can you imagine many men signing a contract contracting their labor for life and not inquiring what the terms are? Pay, wages, fringe benefits, vacation, so on. No, I mean, I'm asking a serious question.
A lot of men may feel more shackled in the marriage than women.
But feeling is of no interest, right?
No, I'm just questioning your statement that men will think more than women will. I mean, not that I think women think, but I don't think men do either.
You mean you think that they just have come to this situation of power just without knowing that it's in their interest?
I don't even think they necessarily feel that they're in a position of power in a marriage.
All you got to do is sort of yank a little at it, and they'll tell you. Mm-hmm. How do you test it, you see? In other words,
can say something?
No.
No, just be behind you.
I was just going to say, wouldn't it be so because the way the value system is set up in our society, men are conditioned from birth to think about what they're feeling because they have what they're thinking about their thoughts, about what they feel has value in our society, while women are not conditioned because they have no value.
Well, that may be the cause of why women do not make this distinction, and why, and I know myself this was the case, that I did not make a distinction between thinking and feeling, and I would often use the same, I thought that I often used both expressions for the same thing. Once somebody, you know, corrected me that when I said, well, I feel that this scientific theory here on this doesn't hold, and people went through, then all of a sudden I noticed how much I used I feel, which is more tentative, like I didn't have a right to think. In other words, if you say I think, oh, but I'm probably wrong. And I thought, and not only am I probably wrong, but it just didn't occur to me the idea of proving you're right and how in the world you'd go about it. I just thought, I realized that somehow, well, I don't know if I said to myself they're men, just that somehow they're all better than I am, and that they probably are right, but they happen to have certain methods of testing that I didn't. I mean, they were taught these skills because they were going someplace, just like we were taught, take the dog, go in the corner, cry all you want, feel it up, right? And then instead of, like, encouraging you to figure out how things work, toys work and all, you know, and building up that whole kind of fascination with cause and effect and what's real and what's not. Like, women are encouraged, and if you look at the fields they go into in college with fantasy, a lot of, what I was going to call blurring of thought, which is actually that you, appearance is everything. But, so that there is a tradition. You can explain why women do this. But what I'm assuming people are here for is that they want out. And that the distinction between feeling and thinking, we must understand and start seeing ourselves wherever we're at and help. All I know in that sense is, I know the distinction, or I can talk about that. I don't know if how, when I first heard it, the things I did in my experience would be related to what happened with other people, and I don't think it's the crux of the matter here. It's interesting to talk about with your friends or anything, or people you want to, but it isn't the subject here. First of all, that's why I say there are a million workshops out of this, but this is only the very first beginning. What is the difference between the two? Is there a difference, and is it relevant to figuring out what the problem is? Because before you can have a movement, you have to understand where you're moving from and where you're moving to. You can't figure out where you're going to if you don't know where you are. And how are you going to figure out the problem? The problem would have to apply to all women. That's what everybody says. Women are discriminated against. Now, that's the simplest class. If you then want to build subsets onto that and qualify poor women, you know, particularly black women, that's the ultimate. So on, that comes at a much later stage. But if we say the problem is that women, something is the matter with the way women are treated, we want to change that. How important is it for us to be able to distinguish between what is our feelings and what we are prepared to argue as fact? What is the distinction? How key is it? And isn't it essential to what the women's movement should be doing and is so obviously evading doing? Now, I've always imagined that people were doing it on purpose because it's much safer over there. But what you're suggesting is that maybe they've been conditioned so that they don't know the difference. But I get nervous when somehow people being dumb is safer, you know. I get very nervous then who's stupid. So I'm not sure myself about that, why people don't. But do you think it's important? Do you think it's relevant, that distinction, feeling and thinking, to solving a problem?
Of course.
You don't.
No, I
don't think you should make the distinction because you'll get all hung up in making the distinction, first of all, and if you can solve the problem, who cares whether it's by thinking or feeling as long as it's solved.
But to solve a problem, you must have a method of solving it.
Yes, but what I'm trying to say is that the scientific method, though it works, you know, most of the time perhaps, might not be applicable to all problems. And if you're going to start saying, well, we must use a scientific method or else we won't be right because we're women and we're supposed to feel and that's what's wrong with us and all this. And
I didn't say that. That's a point of view shared by people in movement. What I'm saying is that to solve a problem, people have made many assumptions that have cost us a great deal, such as we all know what the problem is. So when you said, okay, I'm dumb, what is it? Well, you know. No, literally, this went on for about 6 months. And after a while, you think, God, I'm the only one who doesn't know. And you think, it's like, if you don't know, you can't, nobody can tell you. Is that? So finally came out that they didn't know what the problem was in terms of, is the problem discrimination and employment? Is that the whole thing? If that's the whole thing, then the way you go about attacking it's going to be very different from if it's a whole interwoven, like, ceiling. So to know what the problem is, you've got to prove you know it by defining it. If you say, we all know what the problem is, okay? Okay, what is it? Do you know what the problem is?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. To tell you the truth, I don't.
The problem in terms of feminism, what would you say it is?
I think the problem is that too many people are talking about doing things and they're not doing anything, yeah. And they're trying to find out how to get it done, and then there are the women who don't want to change. And everybody's getting all upset with trying to see who's right and who's going to do what and who's going to be the top person and who's going to wind up.
But if we had, that comes from all that interrelating. If the problem, if the questions were out here, being on top, not being on top, and so on.
I think perhaps there's a problem in wanting other people to do it for you. I believe that if you want to do something, that the best way to do it is do it yourself and just hope other people can follow you, or other people will be able to see things that perhaps they weren't able to see, and you might set an example.
But what did, her question was a good one. What is it?
People are talking about being oppressed or not being able to be on equal terms with men or not having a chance to go into the profession they want or not having the same respect as men, I think that you should start off with yourself and find out why you feel that way, if it's so.
But is that the problem of all women?
No, not everybody has the same problem, but I think basically with the
movement
that a lot of people might have different experiences and different problems, but they're getting it all blurred together and trying to get...
Well, they don't get it all blurred together. So the thing is, when you say a women's movement, right, what is it a movement about? It's in response to a problem. What is the problem? How would you define the problem? Are you going to say that there are many different problems? That's generally, a movement is because a particular group, and in that phrase, which you can discard if you wish, because if you think it's inadequate, that's a challenge that can be made. It concerns women. So you are saying, maybe this is an assumption, that something is the matter with the way women are treated. Usually movements grow up because of some dissatisfaction with the treatment of a particular group. So that's pretty clearly the problem. That is, that there are people who are objecting to the way women are treated. How do you define the way women are treated? And then, what's the cause of that? Because that's obviously the effect, right? That's the result we got on our hands. So that the problem begins with women are oppressed. There are many different expressions of this. Are they all of the same weight? Do some of them fit under one classification, like something called public accommodations, you know, that women cannot go into bars, they can't, nobody seems to mind, but you have segregated bathrooms, so on. Do you want to classify it in the way the Civil Rights Act does? Or do you want to start at the very top with your, with the one thing that is in, that can't really be argued, and the time to argue about it is before you build anything else onto it, is that something is the matter with the way women are treated. Then that's your first premise of your theory construction, because to say women are oppressed is a theory. And the reason construction is so important is what are the most important features? What is the, like, you have the ground on which the building is, and then the foundation is bad. I mean, what do you have? You've got bad ground there, and I mean, the first, you know, the, well, they got a lot of floods, or they have earthquakes from time to time. These things have something, the foundation of the house, what goes up on top of that. Now, if you're going to blast that house out, where are you going to begin? You're going to begin at the foundation. If you want to be economical, and we got to be economical. We don't have much of anything yet. That's why it's so, that's why the construction of your theory is everything. Because you got to know where to put the explosives.
How do you know when you've taken it sort of as far back as it can go? I mean, when I'm writing things, sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm trying to say, well, where can I really start? Where do I have to, like, sort of stop getting this from somewhere else, and where can I start, I guess, with an a priori kind of thing. And I always feel like I have to establish the first thing, but, like, when do you stop and when can you, like, feel that you're establishing it, or do you have to make an assumption and then prove it?
Well, I think you have to, and what's really been, I've been talking to myself for a long time, because no more talk philosophy with women, so you have to argue with yourself. So it's a problem, one of those little details. What I did, and this was just a process of finally realizing timidly, kind of, that nobody else knew either.
The problem,
nobody else knew either what the problem was. I mean, it was a real shock. But then I started thinking, first of all, I was objecting to the now approach, right? I could see, well, I could make all the objections. Then I left now, and all of a sudden, there I was. I had to say something, you know, not just say, well, I don't like that. And I had good reasons, right? So I try to think, well, just that, where do you begin? Because I don't want, first of all, I got better things to, well, I don't have better things to do, but you think you have better things to do than spin your wheels and go no place. You like the feeling that somehow what you're doing is going to go someplace. So you want a good theory, because what you do has to do with thinking that's the best thing you can. So I kept stripping it down. And I tried to find the statement or premise that nobody in the whole woman's movement could object to, the one thing that brought us all together, because there were a million different complaints, all of which were true. So the one thing was that these women shared the assumption that women were, let's say, oppressed, and that's why I said I knew that people thought women, and since women were supposedly the first class separated out, that seemed to buttress. We don't know. I mean, nobody knows. We have literature, history. But if you think in terms of the main institutions of society and which grew out of which and so forth, right? If you say women, then you say are oppressed. People said, it was easy if you were in the movement at the beginning because you always have people, let's say, testing your hypothesis. What do you mean women are oppressed? So you bring all these figures. Economically, legally, the laws are different. Representationally, and then all these million complaints. That's the evidence. And that's the only thing that I could see was incontrovertible, was your first premise on which you had hard evidence all over the world, because the only case where it's universal, both over time and place, which no other class in history has been able to meet that essential. I mean, it's nice to think that for once it's going to be to our advantage, right? That it's been universal over time as far as we know. Have any records, and over space. That is, that it's basically the same in all the countries. If you read, you know, follow the United Nations thing, read all the stuff. The advantage of this being that if we ever figure this one out, it is the model for human oppression. We see the way other class systems come out of it. If we ever figure this one out, you can imagine how all the other groups are going to like this one. They can figure out more what's happening with them, because it grew out of this, which is the most locked in, the most complex, it's had the most time to build up, it's the most locked in, so on. But that's the one thing that I have found that I think is incontrovertible. Now, you then have to get down to defining which term is more important. In other words, how do you define women? And then you have to say, what is a class? How do you define a class? And how does a class evolve? How is it always within a class system? I mean, this is just like kindergarten minus 20. I don't mean in terms of political theory. I mean in terms of whatever has been done anyplace. I mean, it's a mammoth job. That's what's so terrifying, that people haven't even begun with it.
What if feel or think that the sort of the hard kind of evidence that you can look at with statistics and laws and so on and so forth really totally misses the essence of the situation, or what you have analyzed to be what that situation is? If the evidence, I mean, there almost seems to be like a gap. I mean, like women, like you can look at the differences in all these incomes and all of that sort of thing. But that's like almost a different qualitative thing, I guess.
Well, evidence is not the same thing as priorities among that. Or as you say, qualitatively. It's of unequal strength, perhaps, within a theory construct.
Well, if taking the
what do you mean, for example?
Of women never allowed to really become whole human beings, of this denial of a self, that kind of thing, which...
That's a genetic explanation. In other words, you're saying how it came about as opposed...
No, I'm not talking about genetics. I'm talking about...
I mean in terms of theory construction.
I'm
not talking about biological. I'm talking in terms of theory construction. That is, that you talk about how it came to this situation, which is very different. That's sociological, usually. Then to talk about the map of what exists now and the relative strongholds, the key issues, you see, of the whole situation now. I mean, you can write up a description of how a country came to be formed as it is now, geologically, right? How the layers built up and when, you know, there were all these things separate. That's a very different thing from making up a map of where it is now with the strength and so on. So that's what I meant as far as talking about a genetic account, is how it evolved, as opposed to an analytic one, which is taking where it's at, which involves the genetic too. I mean, that gives you tips of what may be key, because a foundation of a building is built before. Now, this may also be an assumption, because maybe you could imagine a building that wouldn't start with building and even supporting a building. Maybe the roof could come. I mean, it sounds wild, but maybe it could. Could it? I mean, you have to ask yourself all these questions. But it is an important distinction for your, you know, later tactics. So, but you aren't you trying to get it? Like when you say the way women feel about themselves.
No, I'm. You could look at it that way. I also think it is. I don't know, sort of at the core of what the situation is. If a person has been always socialized to have their center, in a sense, outside of themselves, and always to relate out there rather than to themselves, then that is part of the oppression. Obviously, it's central to the oppression. And
what do you mean, central?
Unless that's changed, then the women won't do anything about...
But that's more tactical. In other words, how do you get from A to B, that is, from where women are to where we want to go? So you have to know what the oppression is and how it's laid out, why or how women accept it or adjust to it, and the necessary psychological structure and process for this is going to be very important to turn that around, or get them to move forward. Now, the problem with this somewhat, I don't have all out an analysis, but I have this example because I've been thinking about the problem in terms of marriage. Like, how come, no matter how many times you showed the laws and everything, they just say, I don't care, if you show me every proof in the world, I'm telling you, I like it. And then I sort of was talking about, you know, getting housewives under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, and I discovered that if you hold a little carrot outside there, in other words, that their life will be improved by leaving that marriage, you're not going to see it crumble fast enough. So that has to do with one way, tactically, of getting women out of these institutions, that is, lured out, that you devise some program to fight for that is actually going to advance their interests. Because I found there's no way to psychologically change people if they don't see it as materially in their interest to move out. Now, I'm